Hey everybody, Josh Sheridan here with the Barely Legal Podcast. They demand my alter ego, but I won't go. On tonight's show, we have Syke Montano, who is a local rap artist. He's a bunch of things. I became aware of him with the newest album, The Mansion Music, which that came out 2020 or 2021?
2020.
All right.
Wait, with COVID. No, I'm totally lying to you. That was this year.
All right.
Feels like a year ago.
And you and Albert J, who I met personally through Nick Ewing, when we were having, you know, grand designs on all how we were
going right.
to change the world and make the Tampa Bay music scene better. And I actually think the first time, though, that I was aware of you or reached out to you was through Ray Roa, because I was trying to, you know, get into that world. You're number two in a long line of musicians from the hip hop world. Obviously, Mike Mass was the first. I would say, and maybe you correct me if I'm wrong, but the two biggest names in Tampa would be you guys. Would you agree? Or
I mean, there's definitely a few people who have been, you know, they've been here longer and have been doing things. I think in the amount of time that I've been able to go where I've gone, I would say for sure, maybe in the last 2 years alone. But I mean, you got Push Supreme, you got Perception, you got all okay. these other guys. Well, you know.
Those for sure too. But I mean, I can tell you in my thick skull, the two names that made their way through first were you and him. So
I appreciate that.
I have Elliot Mayo, who you may not know by name, but if you met him in person, he's an encyclopedia of music, both hip hop and metal. And he could, you know,
that's cool.
tell me everything about the both of you. But you're not from Florida originally, right?
I am not.
You are from Long Island, New York.
That is correct.
And how old of a young man are you?
I am 26 and a half.
Okay. Yeah, when you stop counting halves and months, and I still want to like give people, because I have two little kids, and you know, until they're about two, you say they're 18 months or they're whatever. Right. And I was like, I'm 367 months old. You
exactly.
Know, just
yeah.
do it forever.
14 million minutes old.
So what is your given name? What is your Christian name? What do we want to call it?
I'm Michael Montano.
Michael Montano. And is that Spanish? Is that Italian? Is
technically, yeah, a lot of people think it's Italian, but Montano is definitely Spanish. I'm 100% Puerto Rican. All my grandparents are from Puerto Rico.
Have you been to Puerto Rico?
I have not. It's blasphemy.
It's beautiful.
I've heard.
I've been two times, and if I could find it somewhere, I'll send it to you. But you land at the airport. The beach is right there with all the hotels, and right across the street from the hotel that we stayed in was a huge cockfighting stadium. And it literally says cockfighting on it. There's like a fucking Chili's and then a cockfighting stadium. And then in the lobby of the hotel was a casino. It's like one of the most popular nightclubs in the world. But beautiful women, beautiful men, very musical people, very, you know, they've got it figured out. I've been to Hawaii. I've been to Puerto Rico. And I would say those two, there's something about the island kind of having their own way of doing things where they seem to kind of appreciate the better things in life a little bit more.
Definitely what I've heard from family members and from people who have visited, that it's a much simpler, but a much more, you know, wholesome lifestyle, because there's not that there's not a rat race feeling, but it's obviously way different than here in the States. Everything's corporate or not corporate, in which case you better have your shit figured out. But at the end of the day, that's been my like number one place to go when I do travel.
So your parents came from there, or?
No, my parents are from New York City.
So grandparents?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Right. And what did your parents do?
Mom was a stenographer and dad was a DJ from the Bronx.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you had music in your life early.
I had no chance. Yeah.
So you're 26. Okay. So what year were you born?
95.
Was he DJing while you were alive, or was
that before? I mean, yeah, he's like 1,000 now, so he's been doing it for since the 70s. I mean, he grew up in the Bronx. He was there during the blackout, like during the birth of hip hop.
And that was when the first time that people were actually using vinyl to DJ.
Yeah, I mean,
did he have like a sick collection? Did he have?
I had a pathway of crates of records, right. Yeah, throughout the entire basement that I had to meander through just to get through there.
Who do you remember hearing in your earliest days?
I mean, ironically enough, a lot of the music I got was from like a digital drop, just because he had a hard drive.
Sure.
But this was before streaming. A lot of people think that I grew up with like a smartphone in my hand. I didn't even have access to internet until sixth grade. So I literally grew up without having that type
of analog.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That immediate gratification, like per se. I mean, I still grew up in a digital age, but yeah, I got like 5,000 songs of all different stuff. Billy Joel, Michael Jackson, but obviously a lot of hip hop that you wouldn't have heard at that age. Like Fushnikins, Lords of the Underground, Tribe Called Quest, Eric B.
Was he doing weddings, or was he doing clubs, or was he doing everything?
Everything, yeah. I mean, from what I know, he started when he was like 15, when he did his little stint in college. He was throwing parties in college. And then after that, he became a radio DJ. He joined Record Pool's most really well known for like 106.1 BLI. That's the top 40 radio in Long Island, specifically Suffolk County. Hot 97, Sirius XM Radio, Party 105.
So music was your part of your life from your earliest memory. But outside of your dad,
my parents met at a club.
That's awesome. That's cool though. I mean, it's such a New York story. So so how long were you in Long Island before you moved?
I mean, I just got here in 2019.
So you've been there for most of your life.
Yeah, I grew up. Okay. Graduated from college there. Everything.
Talk about growing up in the city.
So I lived an hour and a half away from New York City. So I grew up in White.
Who were all the mayors that you lived through? I mean, were you Giuliani? I mean, he would have been.
I was a little kid. I mean, I was 6 years old during 9/11.
Okay.
So. I wasn't really cognizant of a lot of the things that were going on.
Were you cognizant of 9/11? Do you remember that day?
I remember like bits and pieces, like being in kindergarten. I remember my classroom very vividly, but my mom kind of filled in gaps where she told me like her coming in and pulling me out of school. Some of those memories are kind of like, again, I was six. I had no idea.
Did you know anybody who lost any parents or brothers or sisters in it? Or?
Not that I can think of, and if I'm forgetting, then that makes me kind of a piece of shit.
No, it doesn't. this room has magical properties that zaps everybody.
My uncle was a first responder there. He was one of the first on the scene.
Oh, wow.
He never spoke about what happened.
Yeah, so. The trauma, it's hard to relive with people.
Very, very dark day for New York.
So talk about the music scene in New York of your youth growing up. I mean, like, you know, what were you and your friends listening to? Where were you hearing it from? I mean, was it radio? Was it clubs?
It's kind of unfair to say where it came from. Like I said, I grew up in white suburbia. Like most of my friends didn't really listen to hip hop conventionally, at least. I was in a metal band in high school. I played guitar. I've been singing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. No, awesome. I was like not doing the hip hop thing until like later in high school. But I started out from very young singing. I was like classically trained in chorus and choir.
Oh, wow.
Did, as I got older, like school musicals, drama club. In college, I was in an a cappella group that was like so competitive, I had to quit because I was like not going to class. It was like 30 hours of rehearsal.
It was like a Whiplash, but for a cappella.
Yeah, it was crazy. They were, and like we opened for this all female group in Cornell and had this crazy party. Like I had never really traveled until I got a little bit older. When I traveled with Wave Theory to go out west to LA, that was the first time I've ever been west of the Mississippi. So like I very much was kind of like stuck in that New York mindset until I came out here and started to meet, you know, new people.
So in high school, sports, baseball, basketball?
Baseball, basketball, yep. Okay. I played baseball up until like ninth grade, and then I just got to the point where I wasn't practicing, preparing in the off season. It was very political where I'm from, again, small town. My whole
You high were school, very political or the team
the,
was
the,
very,
the whole, okay. I mean, it was 1,000 people in the high school for all grades. It wasn't very big. Our baseball team was number one in New York State multiple times while I was there. The years I stopped playing, they won. So I don't know if it was me that was holding us back or what.
Yeah.
But yeah, very, very competitive and clicky. The parents would, you know, make little league teams and be coaches with each other so their talented children could be on the same team. And like,
were you lower income, middle income, higher income?
Middle for Long Island. I would say middle lower only because it was so unreasonably expensive to live out there.
Was there a lot of Latino with you or was it mostly?
Far and few between.
Was that something that you realized at that age? Was that something that affected you at all? Did you feel marginalized or any kind of?
Honestly, and it's kind of fucked up to say, but I reap the benefits of being a minority while not necessarily looking like a minority at first glance. So I can, on paper, like when I went to college, I can kind of use that. But also, I was definitely not discriminated against as much as I thought I would have been.
Right.
I would say more so by people I knew than by people I didn't know, ironically enough, because once they found out.
They got too comfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I definitely experienced that. Definitely discriminated against in the workplace for not being fluent in Spanish.
Oh, really?
I double majored Spanish and psychology in college and dropped Spanish because it was so hard.
Yeah.
They didn't teach us any conversation. It was
Did your parents speak it in the house or?
No.
Where'd you go to college?
Binghamton.
Oh, wow.
Like an hour north of Scranton.
Okay. And so how far away was that from Long Island?
Like 4 hours, 3 hours.
All right.
It was like 4 hours from my house.
And you said you had one sibling?
Yeah, my sister, she's a nurse right now. She's actually kind of the reason we're in Tampa because
we'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah. That's
we're building.
That's coming up. We'll preview that. So, is she older or younger?
Younger.
Okay. And you guys close?
More now than we used to be.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell me about the household a little bit. You told me what your parents did for a living. Was faith a part of your household? Was it a religious household? Not very much. Was it political household, not very much.
So again, because my I had family members who were literally politicians, obviously that came up. But as like I said, the older I got, the less family that we started to associate it with. I kind of realized there was even when I was very young, I was like, there's definitely a reason that people aren't talking to each other and all that. But I mean, I grew up Catholic. Then we started going to a born again Christian church. Once I started attending high school, I became a little bit more skeptical. And by the time I got to college, basically fully agnostic. I'm the kind of person who will tell you, like, I'm a science person, but I also believe that we don't have enough information to make certain assertions.
Yeah.
So, like, I believe in God, but organized religion is a scam. That's right, kind of it's right. Littered throughout my music. I'm extremely blasphemous on purpose to make the questions come, which I think a lot of people, you know, they don't take kindly to challengers of any sort of, like,
well, tell you, I mean, it's like working out. I mean, your muscles don't grow from laying around. You got to challenge them, right? So
exactly.
Same with your brain, same with your structures and how you see the world and all that kind of stuff. So that's 100%. Sure. You mentioned that you had quite a deep bench of legal minds in your family. You had Supreme Court justices. It was a senator. Who are these people?
So my grandfather was a New York State Assemblyman. He's most notorious for, I don't know if you remember back in the 70s, the lawsuits from the gypsy cab drivers. So basically, New York was trying to make it so that they couldn't make that money and bring in these other companies, and they were marginalizing.
The whole medallion deal.
He was the person who was on the crate with the megaphone, and he was sued by New York State for inciting a riot. I don't think they won that case, but it's a very long time ago. I don't really have the tools to find that information right now, but I guess I do. I just haven't taken the time. But yeah,
you're busy. You got stuff going on.
Of course. But yeah, my grandfather was a New York State Assemblyman. My uncle, my dad's half-brother, Ricardo Montana, was a county legislator running for state senator at one point, obviously did not win. And my other uncle, Armando Montano Jr., was a Supreme Court justice in New York for a short time.
Wow. So, New York judiciary is a tough racket, man.
Yeah, it didn't treat them kindly either over the years. And I actually, that came to bite me at a job I had before I moved to Tampa. the boss of the guy who hired me ran against my uncle in the Democratic Party and lost, and had written at the time legislation to keep my uncle out of City Hall.
Oh, wow.
So when he found out who I was, he kind of like confirmed that name. He said, hey, is your uncle, you know, caught me in an off.
Yeah.
I'm usually on guard for these kinds of things, but like he caught me in a moment. I was like, yeah, that's my uncle. Shit.
Moving to Tampa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's ironically enough, like 3 weeks after I started that job, I found out. So my parents had gotten divorced while I was in college.
Okay.
Mom
How was
remarried
that?
At some point. I mean, you know. I would say because I was in college, it was easier. But growing up, I mean, you know, all households have their issues. And I knew from a very young age that sooner or later.
It was coming.
Yeah. I mean, you know, kids have a good intuition when they're not biased as much when they're young. And by the time I was in college, I was like, people just need to
be close
happy,
with both of them or?
I mean, yeah, of course, you know, there's going to be difficulties. I'm a lot closer with my mom, I would say. Even though my dad came from the music thing, you know, like I said, I didn't start out with the hip hop thing. So when I when I started, he made it very difficult for me to start on that path. The first thing I ever showed to him, I think it was like 14. He said, it sucks, bro. Three words. It sucks, bro. It's
boys
terrible.
And their dads. Boys and their dads is
the best thing he ever could have said to me because I'm, you know, I took it as a challenge.
Well, sure. I mean, so there's that for sure. But boys and their dads, you know, I don't think it's always true. But, you know, early on, there's the tendency to see your son as a little version of yourself. And so you want to foster that. You want to grow it. But then at some point in life, they get where they're surpassing you or they're better than you or they kind of pass you up. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know,
there's a lot of cartoon episodes about that.
Yeah. Are you still like on my team or now are you my enemy or, you know, are you going to be able to be okay with me kind of, you know, doing more than you did or doing better than you did.
Clashing with being middle-aged.
Right. So,
or I guess just aged. Not necessarily
so
middle-aged.
When do you graduate college?
17.
Okay.
2017. Okay. Fucking
Doogie Howser over here.
Hell no.
Okay. And so, but you still stay up there for a couple of years.
Yeah. So I graduated in 17, from Binghamton. I moved back home in Long Island and kind of just started the job search, became a paralegal for 5 weeks.
I love that. What type of law firm?
It was a labor law firm.
Okay.
And I really was interested in law for a while, but the only reason I got the job was because my sister babysat for the guy's kids.
Okay.
So it wasn't
That's
like,
how everybody gets their job.
Yeah, that was the first lesson
job,
I learned.
No hires are merit-based. It's always fucking, you know.
Popularity contest.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so I was there. That didn't work out. he fired me for saying, calling him sir too many times and a couple other. It was, bro, I'm telling you, it wasn't even like worth my 5 weeks. I mean, I was there. They didn't. He handed me a like a 400 page document with a Sharpie and said, I need you to redact all instances of this. And then 6 hours later, found me there sitting with the papers. He's like, why are you still sitting here? Why didn't you just scan it into the computer and use the tool? And I was like,
why didn't you tell me about the tool?
Why did you hand me a Sharpie? I probably would have done that if you didn't give me a marker. Yeah. So it was like little things.
Little power trips.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know.
Let me let you in on a secret if you didn't already know it. Lawyers are fucking assholes.
Yeah. Most people, my mom was a stenographer. I know quite a few of them.
Most, it's oof. So you get through that job. Now, were you playing music in college? Were you playing music in high school? Were you like performing at parties or performing at clubs or anything?
Not hip hop. So
before we even get to the answer to that question, who were you listening to in high school and college?
As
far as music?
High school, once I started getting a little older, I mean, I went through, like I said, I was in a metal band all the way through through my first couple of years. Yeah, we played like
What was their name? What were they called?
Tales of the Wise Men.
Okay.
And we played like Iron Maiden type music.
Oh, I love it. Did you sing?
I was backup vocals. My best friend was the lead singer, and he had those like crazy high notes.
Pitch, yeah.
He grew up listening to a lot of Michael Jackson. That's one of his biggest influences.
Did you have long hair?
No, he did though. No, I always had short hair. Okay. This is the longest my hair has ever been grown out, honestly.
Oh, man, it's crazy. It's 2 inches long.
I know, right? Hey, don't tell people that.
No, it looks good.
But yeah, we were doing a lot of Black Sabbath, went to a lot of concerts. I was a huge Disturbed fan. That's probably my favorite band.
Really?
I saw them twice, was not impressed. It was very disappointing.
Who was your first concert? Do you remember?
I mean, the first concert... I guess technically my first concert was Aaron Carter. I was a little kid.
Oh, from Nick Carter's brother.
My dad was a DJ at BLI, threw Summer Jam or Summerfest or something in Long Island, and he was one of the headliners. So I went backstage and got like an autograph. He barely looked at me. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would say the earliest concert I remember like wanting to attend was probably like either Creed or Warped Tour.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I got older, a lot of metal shows. I've been to 2 hip hop concerts that's a lie now. 3 live, like big headliners ever. Kendrick, Wiz and Snoop, and Nas recently at Gasparilla.
I heard that was epic.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, there was this weird thing going on where like he would like stop the last couple words of his bar. Uh-huh. And then his drummer also was a crazy singer.
Yeah.
And he had the microphone doing like the end of the line, but you couldn't hear him.
Uh-huh.
So Nas was rapping a line and then would stop and you'd hear like,
yeah.
And then he would keep going. So I thought that was kind of weird. I like to rap all my lines.
Sure.
Just, you know, that's just me.
He's got to make it interesting. He's been doing it for 30 some odd years.
Exactly. I mean, it was a great performance. Just the whole being
I had fucking tickets. I swear to God, I bought tickets, couldn't find them. My kids got sick. Have you ever had one of those days where it's like, okay, God doesn't want me to do this, or not God, but you know, world,
the universe is
telling me it's not going to happen. And so I was planning on going the Saturday night. I know for a fact I do every time I buy 2 VIP wristbands, and I try and get my wife to put hers on real loose so she can go Saturday, and then I can give it to a friend and they can go Sunday. Don't listen to that, GMF. But I didn't make it. But Sean O'Brien was texting about what was the song that he covered. He covered a song at the end. Oh, it's like Eric B. and Rakim it's going to kill me.
Oh, yeah. I was there. I don't remember.
It's fine. I'll think of it later. Anyway.
It was a great performance. I mean, Nas is
well, they had the Roots 1 year. They had Erykah Badu. They had Talib Kweli one year. I mean, they always get like a decent act. Such a weird.
It's like a bunch of. Did you hear his new album, Nas?
Uh-uh. Good? Not good.
No, it's probably the. It's hard to say album of the year.
Oh, really?
In light of Donda, and I would say it was
you like
better
Donda?
Than Drake. I don't like Donda. I just realize what Donda is going to be.
Yeah.
I'm not honestly a big Kanye West fan, but as I've gotten older, again, I was listening to a lot of metal in high school. Mm-hmm. I missed the rise of Drake. I missed the rise of Kendrick. I didn't even really like Jay-Z until I really came out to Tampa. Once I linked with Mike Mass, he showed me like, hey, now that you're older, you need to go back and listen to this stuff because you couldn't appreciate
it's like the, what do you call it? It's the research. You gotta go through the motions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm a good deal older than you. And my musical tastes kind of ebb and flow into and out of the hip hop world. But I remember the first in my mind, everybody in my class loved NWA and I thought NWA was cool, but
it wasn't a big influence for me.
Well, for me, so you know, there's the Beatles and the Stones. For I remember in eighth and ninth grade, there was NWA and there was Public Enemy.
Right,
and of I was course, fucking I listened Public, to Public Enemy.
Being from Long Island,
because Do the Right Thing came out when I was in seventh or eighth grade, and I remember watching Rosie Perez shirtless and dancing around with boxing gloves on. And I was like, what the fuck is this movie? Like, what? It was growing up in St. Pete, this little white kid, Catholics. I mean, I have no street cred at all, like nothing. No hardship, no persecution.
We need to go back to the Long Island conversation because you'll find it
interesting. I want to hear about it. But yeah. So, you know, I remember, but all my friends had Jordans. And so I remember when, what's his face? You know, he gets his Jordan stepped on and he's all fucking pissed off. And I just, something about that movie, I don't know why, I spoke to this little white kid from St. Pete. I just loved it. And I love Public Enemy and I love that song and, you know, Fear of a Black Planet, 911's a joke. And just all these things, I was like, fucking hey, this is so cool because it was so alien to me. It was not absolutely my experience of the world at all. But I, you know, it's just like, why do people like horror movies or why do people like whatever? It's like so other than what your experience is that it holds this interest for you. For sure. And so there was that. I mean, obviously the Beastie Boys is white. I mean,
I was just going to say the Beastie Boys were probably one of the biggest, from a young age, one of the bigger influences in terms of like music styles. Cause I liked rock and I liked hip hop. You know, I listened to them. I listened to Run DMC.
Check your head when they started doing all the instrumentals.
It was crazy.
That album for me. So I can probably rattle off the five most important albums for me. And that one is in the top five. And that was when I was in high school, freshman or sophomore year. And they were so, they informed the style. They informed, like, everybody started wearing, like, retro basketball jerseys and old school, like, Shelto Adidas. And, you know, they're kind of retro, weird kind of, it was almost satire of rap music, but it wasn't satire, like,
sarcastic.
No, it was serious, right. But they were funny and they were intelligent, but, you know, I always put an asterisk by that when I'm listing, you know, hip hop or rap influences, because I know that's, like, yeah.
It's hip hop is a weird genre.
Is that even the word to use? Like, I don't even know.
I've gotten older, like, I used to be the person to hate on, like, mumble rappers and all these people. But as I got older, I was like, it's just, we're not doing the same thing. Once I, you know, started taking music more seriously, I was like, I can't hate on a guy like Lil Yachty because he's marketing really well to his audience. He's getting major sponsorships. He was the most featured artist of 2016. He had, like, 65 major artist features. Like, nobody was doing that back then. And I kind of realized as I got older, like, there's entertainers, there's MCs, and there's rappers. There's people who aren't really rapping. They'll rap over vocals or use a lot of auto-tune, and they're still really good. Their content, you know, how they deliver everything. There's MCs, which are the non-over vocals people, the lyricists, the people who in a live situation are going to bring you the same kind of quality you'd expect on an album.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's rappers who are kind of like a hybrid of both. I've seen people kind of, you know, I would put, like, Dave East in a rapper category and not an MC category, because Dave East is known for his business ethic, his exceptional pop music, you know. Ironically enough, during quarantine, he messaged me on Instagram. I got one message. That's it. It just said, 100 emoji, you working, bro.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I was in quarantine for almost 2 months straight. Didn't leave the house except to, like, go to the store once or twice.
Right, right.
So, like,
that you
I wasn't doing anything for it. Yeah, there wasn't any event that was going on that prompted that.
Had Mansion Music come out yet? Or?
No. This was during, like, 2020, when right after COVID happened. And
wow.
That was, like, kind of a weird little message from God of, like, hey,
here's what you need to be doing.
Just keep doing what you're doing, not even, like, change course. So,
what's the first album before Mansion Music? Psych 101. That came out in 2019?
No, that came out in 2020.
Okay.
We did that show. That was right before the Bricks shut down. We did my album release at the Bricks October
23rd. The COVID 23rd.
Shut down? No. So,
okay.
So we did my show, and the next day the Bricks shut down for, like, months.
Yeah.
So we were the last event there, unfortunately. Before that, we dropped Good Talk. That was my, like, mixtape in 2019, like, after I moved out here. So I had, like, 17 tracks, I think, of, like, some industry beats, some, like, industry tweaked kind of, like, cover, but not really. Some originals, and that was fully mixed and mastered by Stigmata back in Long Island, Down Island Studios. Easily the best Suffolk County, like, studio. He's worked with a lot of people. They opened for John Bellion at Jones Beach Theater,
okay,
which is huge. You asked about the hip hop scene in kind of Long Island.
Yeah.
Non-existent.
Really?
To my understanding, several years, and when I say several, you know, probably over 10, several years ago, Sean Price and like Ari the Rugged Man or someone else had a concert. I'm pretty sure it was Sean Price for sure. And I think a local got shot or somebody got shot at event. So the venue owners took it to, I think, somebody at the legislative level. And the townships came together and agreed.
Like fucking,
no big hip hop acts will
be booked. Footloose, man. There's no more dances inside city limits. Yeah,
literally. Yeah, yeah. But that transcended to underground people. So even after I had been in Tampa, I was trying to get us shows in Long Island, and I was reaching out to venues of places that I had been to for concerts. Like, hey, I already have X amount of people locked in. We can bring in, you know, 150 people, charge $15 at the door, give you this percentage. It's a very easy night. We don't promote violence or, you know, speak disrespectfully about women or glorify drug use, like the typical tropes of what rap and hip hop is. Because out there, again, it's white suburbia. They listen to country music. They listen to a lot of pop music. And even finding an open mic night was difficult.
That's one of the things that I've always found interesting and kind of admire about the hip hop world is there's much more of a participation by the artist in the actual production of the show, the promotion of the show. They're almost their own promoter, producer, you know, whereas a lot of these other bands, they just show up, set up their shit and play.
Hip hop's the only genre that you have to prove to people that what you're doing is serious. Even if you're like a not even that good band, if you're performing with live music, you're performing because I think a lot of people are very tired of person on a stage with the microphone rapping.
Right.
Especially when most of these people rap over their own vocals or haven't practiced their verses and forget. They don't have stage presence. You know, they introduce themselves.
Well, I mean, there is the stigma about, you know, showing up late, not showing up at all. I mean, you got the whole Jay Electronica thing with Tom DeGeorge at
Of course. Crowbar,
you know.
And when you're at that level, it almost gets to, like, this has kind of been like a fear, like that fear, whole fear of success. Like, I don't ever want to be in a situation where I make an arrangement with somebody who's, you know, reputable and because of who I am, can't deliver on an arrangement. And I can't necessarily blame him. He went to work on Kanye West's album.
Yeah.
But then he canceled after the fact. They tried to pick other days and they were kind of giving them the runaround. So, you know,
yeah.
There's always I try to operate off the notion that I don't know what the hell's going on behind closed doors. All I know is that he didn't show up.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So how do we get from metal to hip hop?
I mean, I was always listening to hip hop.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up even as a young teenager listening to Tribe Called Quest, a lot of so Nas, Eminem was a big influence. And
see, Eminem came after me. So Eminem, like, and Slim Shady was my first idea of Eminem, and that just seems so goofy to me. And I know he became more serious after the fact. And I feel like he was the first, or at least the first that I was aware of now, this is where I'm going to need you to educate me, but the speed being a component of things. Like, I know
he wasn't the first.
Not the first, but
yeah,
that's where I became aware that that was a thing. And then, you know, years later, you got Run the Jewels and you got those two guys who, you know, do that. And, you know, the speed of it became.
I mean, Chip Fu and Fu Schnickens, I have a verse where I talk about how, like, I think their first major album dropped in 92, and he was rapping crazy fast about, like, Looney Tunes and cereal and just like going off with these crazy rhymes and sound effects. But he got that from someone. Like, a lot of this stuff that we use in hip hop was happening in the islands. You know, hip hop is inherently Caribbean. It's Latin, African, Jamaican roots for sure. And I think that the thing that makes hip hop so great, and it literally is the most pervasive music genre on the planet. There's no other music genre that touches as many cultural demographics than hip hop. I think it's because hip hop is predicated on the notion of using what somebody else created to inspire something new. That's what they were doing before the blackout. They were taking beat breaks. The DJ was using the two turntables to loop the break where there was no lyrics and it was just like the drums and maybe a bass or something. And MC would grab the mic and rap. And that it didn't even become popular until Sugar Hill Gang dropped Rapper's Delight, which wasn't even a real group. It was an A&R person who had put
people together.
They didn't even know each other. And then they dropped Rapper's Delight, and the people in the hood were like, they're doing what we're doing, and they're profiting tremendously off of it. So, but I mean, hip hop was literally born. The blackout happened, and all of a sudden, all these groups came out because they looted all of the stores that were selling the hardware. They couldn't afford
it. So everybody got it.
Yeah, hip hop is literally a genre of, and I hate to say it this way, but stolen music. I mean, Will Smith made his career off of huge, huge, very recognizable samples.
But you know what? So is fucking Elvis. So is Led Zeppelin. Matter. I mean, Led Zeppelin.
Exactly. It really is all music, but hip hop, it's like the main means of production. People who produce original, non-sampled music, you know, it's far and few between, and not really anyone does anything absolute. You're going to have samples. You're going to have original. You're going to have organic with live instruments as opposed to plugins. And at the end of the day, I've always said, if the music is good and there's conviction behind your words, I'm all about it, you know?
Here's my love of hip-hop music, where it is from. And I've had this conversation with a bunch of people locally, people that, you know, own record stores, musicians, club owners, and all this other stuff, is if you look around this room, you see a lot of punk rock posters, a lot of skateboarding stuff. To me, hip-hop was the last dangerous music. You know, punk in the 70s and 80s, you know, you had skinheads showing up, you had bikers showing up, you know, there's all these stories about the Cro-Mags getting into fight with people from different parts of New York and Agnostic Front and the Bad Brains coming up from DC and Black Flag traveling around, Minor Threat. And you watch these videos and it's all these angry white kids that are just kicking the shit out of each other, punching. And it was angry. It was guttural. It was coming from like the
bedrock.
The id. It was the subconscious just anger about something. And what they were angry about, what hip hop was angry about, were two different things. But the last dangerous music, like what's dangerous anymore?
I mean, that's a tough adjective because dangerous could mean so many things. I mean, I've been to country shows, not that I've gone on my volition.
Hey, you know what? That's an amazing.
You know what I'm saying? That's like, an amazing. There's a lot of hoods in the room versus there is a lot of hood in the room. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, that's funny. You know, country music has become dangerous for other reasons entirely, but that's an interesting
There's great
concept.
Country music too. I mean, I would say during Vietnam was probably the real birth of, when you're saying dangerous, rebel music, people who are openly against the system. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, you know, Elvis,
bluegrass music,
Elvis waving his dick around. You know, people were like, "Oh, that's so sexual, that's so sexual." And then the Beatles, they dared to grow their hair a little bit longer than yours is right now, and it was.
I mean,
fucking,
Rush was considered a demonic Satan band.
Oh,
and that
for
was,
sure.
That was what 1970.
They're like video game music, like, you know. But you know, the last I remember, Two Live Crew as a kid. I remember N.W.A. as a kid. As a kid, I remember the Ghetto Boys as a, and that was like, you felt like you were doing something bad if you were listening to that music, or you felt like you were going to be in trouble, or you had to hide those tapes because it always had some girl with their tits out, or
exactly. I mean,
you know,
there's every generation has that. I feel like now, the frowned upon music. If you look at like the death metal scene, I feel like the older generation still frowns upon a lot of the more extreme, even raves. The older generation doesn't understand.
Well, raves
the
don't even do raves even EDM, really happen anymore.
I mean, maybe not during COVID, but pre-COVID. I mean, the EDM scene, when you say dangerous, I mean, I would consider dangerous anywhere where people are frequently dying.
Well, you know? So I don't think the music
I don't see people rolling on Molly at hip-hop shows every day. That's not a
– So the scene is dangerous there.
For sure.
The music, I don't know if I'd agree, but, definitely – I mean, I grew up in Tampa in fucking Morrisound. We had, you know – Obituary, Deicide, Morbid Angel, Cannibal Corpse, all these people. And I mean, you know, crazy, crazy people. And I've represented some of these people as an attorney. And, you know, these are a lot of these people are, you know, kind of red in certain areas of their neck and kind of, you know, have certain views of the world. But I just feel like music stopped being.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I feel like music stopped being dangerous, somewhere in the late 90s, early 2000s with, you know, the boy bands and with whatever. And now, like, there was a time where I could have told you everybody who was the top 10. And now I don't even know, like, who's the driver's license girl? You know, it's not Dua Lipa, but it's one of those girls. Like, I don't even, I know you're looking at me funny, but like my daughter wants to listen to Imagine Dragons and my soul just dies like 5% every time we have to play it in the car driving her in the morning.
I mean, you know, I can't imagine why my grandparents listened to some of the stuff they listened to, but it's at that time, there wasn't really anything like that. I mean, we are I would say anybody who grew up during the 80s or the 90s or the 2000s, we are the most spoiled sports fans and we're the most spoiled music fans because we grew up in the age. I mean, There's no rapper older than 60. I literally looked at the list the other day. I think there's maybe one well-known rapper. I don't even remember who it was. Who's like 61. None of the Run
DMC guys.
It didn't exist back then. Yeah. So we haven't even really seen what a life cycle of hip hop looks like. Sure. It's never happened before. So to think that, and that hip hop is one of the biggest music genres, charting, streaming, live concerts, merchandise. I mean, you name it, that you can find it in any country. It's kind of scary because there's a lot of responsibility on, like you said, the GOATs and the people who are like the top 10. I mean, Nas, what he did with his most recent album, he solidified himself to me as a top 5 rapper. I don't think anybody could tell me that they're
who
not
are the top 5. Give me the top 5.
Another loaded question. Top 5 Barsmiths or top 5 overall package?
Just give me a top 5 total. Any just top total 5 package.
I mean, off the top of the head, and I'm sure I'll be mad at myself for this later, you know, without taking into account any of their like personal lives or how they are towards people, all that. Just content from a fan's perspective alone. Lupe Fiasco, Black Thought, Andre 3000, Nas and Jay-Z. Just in a total package. I could say Drake. I could say Rakim, who is Barsmith-wise probably the most important.
What is Barsmith?
The technical aspect of writing and MC performance.
Okay.
So taking syllables and using them in a percussive manner to create rhythms that are not normally created in speech.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah. And I feel like that, you know, it's a lost art. Again, you know, during the 70s when hip hop was being born, that's just what they were doing. They were picking up a mic, kind of freestyling off the top of the head, which I'm not a fan of these days. I take my time with the pen, but...
But you could tell listening to your music. You could tell you put some thought into what you're saying. It's not just...
I rehearse it 500 times before I lay it down on a record. So
how do you get to Tampa? How do you meet Mike? How does Wave Theory enter the picture? Like, what's that whole story?
So when I was in college, I hit up an artist called Cambada. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was around here probably around like 2010 before he started to make big waves underground. He, Mike Mass, and Joyner Lucas were out here kind of running things. Cambada left, Joyner obviously left and popped and became super famous. And then Mike is holding it down here in the city as, you know, the gatekeeper, I would say, for underground music. But yeah, I was a huge fan of Cambada's in high school going into college. And one night, like 3 a.m, I was drunk, I was smoking, just hanging out. I was like, let me hit him up on his fan page and see what he says, because I'm trying to get into the game. He's the best. At the time, I really thought Cambada was... lyrically and still think
I love that people up in New York are listening to fucking people in Tampa. Like, that's kind of backwards to me.
Well, I think he's from New York, then came to Tampa, and then moved to Connecticut. Now he's in Connecticut, and he signed to Mellow Music now with Joel Ortiz and all them. So he's, you know, doing his thing. But yeah, I hit up Cambada one time and I was like, I saw that you posted about doing features on your social media. Here are some shitty YouTube recordings that I made, but if you fuck with me, if you think that I can't have any skills, I will work with you. If you think that I'm not ready, don't take my money and just do that for the sake of doing it. And he messaged me back, you know, via email. He was like, yeah, let's work. So I was like baffled. That was my favorite. That was literally my favorite rapper in the world. So to be able to start my career working with him was like mind blowing. So
did you know at the outset what you wanted to be? Like, did you know what your style was going to be? Did you know what you...
By that time? Yeah. By the time I reached, I mean, I had been submitted. I just wrote this in I got a magazine interview, like Q&A thing that I got the other day. And they asked me about kind of like my academic experiences. I used to write rhymes instead of essays.
Okay.
In like honors classes in college, I submitted a paper with like my own lyrics and using it to analyze like political and social commentary in music and basically prove that music is society, not part of society. There's never been a society without music. So therefore it is inherent in civilization. And I got like an A for the whole class. I had C's the whole class and I gave him that paper and like, once I started writing in high school, my cousin was really the one who kind of made me set the standard because he's unfuckwittable. Like, when he was like 15, he was showing me stuff he was doing. And most of the rappers I've heard in my lifetime can't do what he did when he was 15, let alone now that he's 32.
So he's still doing it?
He never participated as an active artist.
Okay.
It's more so a thing that he did because he was good at it. And, you know, when he was younger, it was probably more cathartic than anything, but he never wanted to like perform. He produces, he makes beats, and he's got an incredible ear, and he's about to produce a few tracks for me, and it's going to be definitely a big level up, and I'm excited. But his lyrical abilities were like the bare minimum standard. I was like, if I can't be this good, I shouldn't compete. So it took before I even reached out to anyone for any serious music ventures, Like I said, I was doing a cappella performing. Like I wasn't doing anything hip hop related on stage. But I hit up Cambada. We did some tracks. Flash forward.
So that's what got you here.
Well, when I found out I was moving to Tampa, I reached back out to him after we had worked and done stuff together.
Right.
I went to Connecticut to record with him. And then I was in Long Island. And when I realized I was going to be in Florida, I was like, hey, I remember seeing on your social media, you used to live in Tampa. Who should I hit up to get involved in the scene? Because again, in Long Island, there was no, it's not like it was here. There, you had to dig to find anybody wanting to do something with hip hop.
Right.
And I was part of another collective in Long Island called Dead Rabbits that kind of didn't have strong leadership. So the work ethic wasn't there and I ended up leaving. So I was like, I need to come out here and kind of start over. And Cambada was like, hit up Chris Jackson, hit up H, hit up Mason Kane, hit up Mike Mass. Mike was the only one who responded to any of my messages because I was a stranger.
By the way, that's Mike's, I don't know if it's his girlfriend, but the girl that came with him, that's her sunglasses right there. If you see him again, right there by past
those bucks. Oh, yeah, I see him.
She left those here.
Terrible.
Anyway.
You said his girlfriend left them?
I don't know if it was his girlfriend, but it was a girl that was with him. She sat very quiet. Yeah, we'll edit that part out. So
Cambada, I was like, yo, put me on. Tell me who to hit up. I hit up Mike. And I told Mike, Cambada told me to hit you up. And he was like, wait. Cambada told you to hit me up. Come pick me up right now. So I was like,
that was all I needed to hear.
Literally. Yeah. So he, I picked him up when he was living in Ybor and he showed me the streets, showed me all the spots. And then from there, I mean, I was here 2 weeks. He booked me for a show for my first show. I showed up in like khaki shorts and like a weird t-shirt. I looked like a middle school student and nobody thought I could rap. And then I did my thing and this girl came up to me and was like, yo, just wear something more adult-like and more like pleasing to the eye because you look like you're in middle school. But that was the craziest shit I've ever heard in my life. And that was the first time I had ever performed a booked event. And that was it for me.
You remember that night?
Oh, clear as day. That was at the Bricks Lounge.
Were you, tell me about how you felt, what you thought going into it, what you thought coming out of it.
I mean, walking in, I was kind of, because I had performed some open mics and I had done some things for some people hip-hop-wise in New York, whether in college or in Long Island, but nothing more than two handfuls. So I was nervous, of course, and there weren't a lot of people there. The drinks were expensive and the bartenders were rude. It was like the perfect
introduction. Was there a point during it when you're like, I'm crushing this, I'm feeling it, like you kind of got over?
No, I was the whole time I was performing, because I was watching the crowd and I wasn't getting
anything. Response.
Not even like, oh, fuck this guy, or like, oh, he's really good. Like they were just looking at me.
Yeah.
Nobody moved, nobody left, nobody came in. It was just, they stood there and nobody clapped when I finished.
Right.
Or maybe a couple people did, but like I walked outside. I was like, all right, I have some things to learn, whatever. You know, I feel like I rapped good. Like I said, I didn't mess up my words.
Yeah.
But so this girl came out and she was like, no, like we were more shocked that you did what you did. You know, I rapped fast and I used big words and they didn't expect that. And that was kind of a big wake up call to me. But
what year is that?
That was right when I got out here, April 2019. So I was like fresh off the boat, like ready to go.
I mean, that's 2 years ago and that, but it's a lifetime ago too, right?
I was a completely different person. I was coming out of a relationship that fractured my bones.
Yeah.
And kind of had to get over that throughout the summer. Really kind of focused on music and work. I was working for Enterprise and getting my ass kicked, working 50 hours a week, 6 day work weeks.
Yeah.
And I was driving from Newport Richey to Tampa, which for those of you who don't know is almost an hour drive.
And the Newport Richey rap scene is just like fucking,
it's non-existent,
incomparable.
I mean, it's not non-existent. Albert J, John Diddy, Johnny Voss. I mean, Lito is up there, my producer or one of my producers and my engineer. But I was just like, I was just so excited to be a part of it. You know, I remember meeting Danny Faz at Ella's, that was the first hip hop show that I attended in Tampa. Mike was performing new music. Lewis Jr. was on there. And Lewis Jr. was performing, and I remember seeing all these people singing his music, and they knew his words. And I was right. Like, he's a local, like, I know he's a local guy. Someone just told me, like, he's a local cat, and they know every fucking word this guy is saying. I need to start learning and learning quick. So,
how'd you meet Albert J? Part of the crew?
I was with Mike Mass at the Hub in 2019, and he actually introduced Albert to me as a promoter because Albert was doing a lot of shows in Newport Richey.
Albert's a trip, man. He's. Yeah,
the fucking guy. Albert, you're mad ugly for when you listen to this. but yeah, so Mike introduced us and Roxanne Gallo, I think her name is.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, she was there too. So that was when I met her. We were all at the Hub just hanging out. And at that point, I was kind of already like unofficially part of Wave Theory, traveling with them, doing shows with them.
Had Psych 101 come out yet, or was that?
No, Psych 101 came out after COVID. Okay. So we were working on all that when that was going down. We had been on a tour right before COVID hit, like March 1st, we came back to Tampa. We had a show 2 days or 3 days before COVID hit the news. And then when the NBA shut down, everything got canceled, all our shows, tours. I was trying to quit my job at that point to tour and like try to make an impact while I had the money and time saved up. But yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of twists and turns. Like I said, I was a part of these collectives. So I was with Wave Theory for a while, then eventually led to kind of find myself in as an individual, because being a part of a band, choruses, ensembles. Mike? I mean, yeah, obviously, okay. You know, when that's Wave Theory is his baby.
Yeah.
So anybody, whether it's me or someone else who can come in and threaten the sanctity or the stability of that situation is going to be an issue. And that would go for anything. If I had a sports team and I had a player who was coming in and they were doing well and then wanted to leave, I would be upset too. So obviously there was some tension, but at the end of the day, we're all adults and we all have the same goal in mind. We've done a lot of work together, and I have a lot of respect for those guys and girls. And Mike took me under his wing and not only introduced me to a lot of people, but showed me around Tampa, taught me about the game, taught me about rapping. Just
talk about, you know, for a minute, if you can, what the scene is like in Tampa. Like, do you think it's growing? Do you think it's not growing? Do you think it's plateaued? Like,
this is the epicenter of live music right now, of the world right now, because of the circumstances. People from all over the world are throwing shows in Tampa because they can't do it anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I, from my limited view, have kind of felt like we've hit a ceiling a bit in Tampa where we don't have a Nas or a Jay-Z out here. And I say we only because I'm here out here now. There are, you know, guys like Mike who've been here for 15 years maybe might be able to speak differently on that. But for me, there's no champion yet. There's no GOAT of Tampa who's internationally or
the Tampa guy.
Known.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, I think underground wise, there's definitely contenders. Dochi doing her thing, getting featured on Isaiah Rashad and being on tour with him. That's huge for Tampa. You know, shout out to 5-5 Studios for being able to be a part of that. And I just think that the Tampa music scene needs to move past their egos and the territories and the things they've built up and unify to make sure that we don't allow the culture gentrification to come here, because that's what's happening is just like anywhere else when, you know, we're one of the most moved to cities of the year.
I think I'm an enemy there. I think I'm part of the problem.
Why?
I opened up a law firm in Tampa Heights. I was like, fucking, I'm part of the problem. We got a halfway house across the street and then fucking.
I'm more so talking about the people coming from out of town, buying up places, setting up studios.
Setting up fucking condos and all this other shit.
Yeah, having the money and throwing the shows when people out here who've been grinding to get those opportunities now can't have it because there's just a bigger name or, you know.
Well, this is a favorite topic of mine. Sorry to cut you off. This is a favorite topic of mine because I think that talent-wise, Tampa can stand toe-to-toe with any other town.
Talent-wise alone, bar for bar, lick for lick, singers. There's country, there's pop, there's EDM, there's DJs, there's hit. There is nothing you can't
salsa,
find in Tampa.
I mean, just everything. All of it. And it's so good. I mean,
and it's authentic. It feels raw.
So one of the phenomenons that have happened on this show is I am the constant for every episode. So I have heard every podcast. I'm the only person who's heard every podcast because I'm the one fucking doing it. For sure. I've heard myself tell these stories and say these things time and again, and there's this danger that I think everybody else has, but I'm going to say it anyway. I look at, you know, New York, L.A., Atlanta, New Orleans, Austin, you know, Nashville, these different places, and say, how are they able to do something that we haven't yet been able to do? Is it a studio? Is it a venue? What is it that put them over, you know, and I don't know what it is.
I couldn't give you an answer for that either.
But it's something I think about a lot. And I mean, I've talked about it with fucking everybody from Tom DeGeorge at Crowbar, Sean from, you know, who was Broke Mold. Now he and I are doing M&E together. Fucking Mike from, you know, Wave Theory, Sean Kyle, who produces everybody, you know, all these different people. And they all have their opinions, but it's not a talent issue. So if it's not a talent issue, what is the issue?
Saying those people you mentioned are the issue.
Not I'm them,
just,
but no.
I'm just saying there is a horrific ego problem here where nobody, not, and I can't say nobody, there's no absolutes, but there's a lot of people who I've heard who either based on experiences, based on perceptions or rumors, they don't rock with certain people. And in turn, there is a disconnect in the scenes. And I think, you know, you had mentioned punk and hip hop, and even though they were doing different types of music, they were very close, you know, those fans in those scenes, especially in Long Island. Like, I got very close with a lot of the punk guys, especially because I did rock, but they knew I did hip hop and they were like, they were all about
well,
it.
What's the,
you know, I feel like there's love in Tampa, but there's a lot of people who are like, I'm just going to do my thing. And like, I want you to eat, but not at my table kind of thing. And yeah. There's nothing wrong with that until we're at this huge standstill of, we got all these giants and we're kind of just keeping it here. There's nothing wrong with that. If you want to be a gatekeeper, if you want to be, you know, the go-to guy in the city, if you're making a living off of this, I can't blame you. But there's more than enough talent here where we don't need to bring, I love Nas. We don't always need to bring out guys like that. We have that here. I mean, when we did Mansion Music, like, in the grand scheme of things, I'm a nobody. I mean, people in these circles know me.
I can tell you a story about Mansion Music, but go ahead.
But, you know, me and Albert J sold out that show. We had $100 VIP tickets. Like, I'm a nobody. I don't even know people who would pay $100 to go see Nas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who I know who love Nas who didn't go because it's on a Saturday and, you know, I might have to work and that's $40. But, you know, we were able to do that. And I think that rubbed some people the wrong way of being a newcomer and doing a show at the Vault, where a lot of people have tried throwing shows and couldn't.
I want to see a hip hop show at the Castle. I want to see something fucked up.
I've heard people want to do that. I've only been there once.
I want to see two like very polar opposite communities just get.
I feel like it'd be a good trap show.
It would be interesting.
You know.
So you just said a few things that kind of start me off down a couple of different paths. Sure. So there's three different paths we're going to go on. We're going to go on Nick Ewing. We're going to go on St. Pete, and we're going to go on massage therapy. So here's where we go. St. Pete could be the fucking moon as far as that community and this community. And it's crazy because it's 15 minutes across the bridge, but they don't come over here. We don't go over there.
Very few people.
And it's if they could figure out a way to get on the same fucking page, I think that would be a big, big, big thing. I mean,
so this is another thing I'm saying about egos. I just heard about someone who, and I think I remember the person, but I'll just leave their name out for the sake of not naming them, but they were telling me about finishing up like an open mic somewhere that they were doing, or like a regular monthly event that they were doing, and they no longer did the event there. And while they were closing out their final night there, the venue owner came out and was like, oh yeah, well, like, we don't need them. Like, we're still going to do this kind of thing. And that's it right there. It's that, like, it's so territorial and it's very petty because we're fighting over crumbs here. Realistically speaking, like, we should be thinking way bigger than Tampa. This just happens to be the backyard. And because of that, we have access to resources that a lot of other artists underground especially don't have. I mean, in New York, I would travel 4 hours to go see a producer I wanted to work with. I feel like in Tampa, everything's 20 minutes
Everybody's
away.
Everybody's fucking lazy.
You know, well, lazy, I know a lot of people working hard and not working smart. I know a lot of people putting a lot of time and money and they're not doing the promo. They're not doing the marketing. They're not getting someone talented to make their album art. They're doing it themselves with a weird picture and a cheap Instagram filter.
Yeah, yeah.
The quality suffers from, I think, kind of the lack of urgency or the sense of urgency, and like, people are talented, but they're like disillusioned by the oversaturation of all these artists. And I speak mostly on hip hop, but I see it with a lot of other groups as well. Music is like professional sports. It's like a 1 in a million chance that you're going to be able to make a living off of just performing, which, to your point of artists throwing their own shows,
yeah,
why wouldn't they? Why would I sit around at home and wait for so-and-so to hit me up when I can book the venue, I can get the sponsorship, or I can get the money to book the show, set the ticket price how I want to set it, book the artist I want to perform with, and then go and do a night with a photographer or videographer that I paid or hired specifically for that event at a venue that I chose, instead of going to some bar where I don't know how many people there are going to be for free or right. for $50 and kind of waste my time and drive an hour out of the way for no reason.
So, couple things. So one of the things with COVID that I talk about all the time is it's removed touring artists from your options here locally, mostly.
Yes.
That's starting to change now as things reopen. But for almost 18 months, 2 years, if you wanted to see live music, it was going to be a local artist.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be a touring artist. And I thought that was huge because it was giving them more of the floor to be in front of people and
COVID
see things.
COVID was the weirdly enough the best thing.
The equalizer.
To
the equalizer. In
I
some
wrote
ways.
Two albums worth of music in those 60 days in quarantine right. that I was there. It was actually the most mentally peaceful that I've been since.
When you don't have the pressure and you can just kind of fucking yeah. So yeah, I mean, I really think that I don't know. I want Tampa to have its time. I just really want it to have its time. And so
we're there.
That leads me to point two, which was Nick Ewing. So he had this grand idea of fucking just the unifying theory of everything, somehow like making it all just work harmoniously. And I remember that night that I drove out there. First off, I thought I was going to get fucking killed driving out to his house. I was like, it's like, okay, you're going to make a left, and then you're going to make a right, and you're going to go to a fence, then I'm going to open the fence, and then I'm going to be behind this trailer. And I was like,
I'm going to die tonight.
I'm fucking getting killed tonight. This is what's happening. So I sat there, and I had never met you before, never met Albert J before. And Nick, the thing about Nick is you never know if he's fucking with you or not. Like, he's so, like, positive and just kind of happy. It's like, is he clowning me, or is he literally this way? And so
he's very zealous.
He's just really zealous. And I was just like, the energy, I'm down with the energy. Cause I mean, clearly you got it in spades. And then Albert did his PowerPoint and all that other stuff. And then I heard about how it went with Tom and, you know, getting back to the point that you mentioned about the egos and the cliques and that to me, I think is the biggest reason why. That's the biggest obstacle to this not getting over is
how do we be okay putting one person or one group in each genre forward as the best? How can someone who operates based on the notion that they work every day to be the best concede to someone else that they're the best? But that's why, you mentioned about like me and Mike Mass being, you know, very competent artists in the city. And the first name that came to mind was Pusha Prime. Especially in recent events, I didn't know him as much when I moved out here, but I got to know him over the years that I've been out here. You know, Albert J would come to mind before me because he was doing what I was doing 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now he's throwing the shows.
I mean, I don't know fucking shit. So whatever I think is doesn't mean anything. But.
No, I mean, it's the perception is important because that's half the battle is, you know, kind of the fake it till you make
theater,
it.
The theater, the smoke and mirrors, like how is it landing with the public?
I have a day job, but I tell every employer this, like I have a double life. Like there are going to be days where I'm coming in here on 1 hour of sleep because I had to perform and stay late to talk to the owner and network with this person and then drop this person off and have a session and that parlay that into another opportunity. And I'm going to come in here tired, but I also
will do my job.
Bust my balls. I actually just got a raise the other day. First raise I've ever gotten, like real raise.
Where are you working?
I work at a company called Velocity.
Okay.
They're downtown Tampa. They're like a staffing company, but not. So it's not third party. It's all direct hires. We basically partner with internal hiring staffs and then.
Do you do law firms? I need people.
Literally anything.
Okay. Let's talk about that later.
Yeah, we will.
All right.
But yeah, so I've kind of kept that idea of both lives.
The third prong, and this is where I lose any respect that I have whatsoever with anybody. So my wife, we have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old and, you know, run a law firm. My wife's doing the mommy thing every day. So we have an appointment every Friday night with each other. That's our date night if we can do it.
Cute.
And one of the things that we do is we go, there's up on Henderson, there's massage essentials. So we both go and we'll get a massage. And Johnny at Massage Essentials, we were talking and he'd never heard of Psych Montano. He'd never heard of Mike Mass. He never heard of Run the Jewels. He never heard that Public Enemy had a new album out. He never heard of the new Tribe Called Quest. So I turned a massage into fucking educating him on this. And I got Mansion Music was the soundtrack. I had the coolest massage ever in the history where Johnny always plays fucking Sade and that's great. I love Sade, but we did a Mansion Music and he you had the biggest fan. Like so the CD that you gave me that night, I gave it to him because he was like, he's like your biggest.
That's cool. That's dope.
He's fucking super stoked on it and he was just loving it. And I was like, right? He's like, I didn't even know that like locally that this was here or whatever. And so, I mean, listening to your stuff, it holds its water with anything, like any level, any production, any scene, any whatever. I mean, it's legit good. And so today when we kind of talked and confirmed that you were coming in, I took your both your albums and I've been listening to them all day, and I'm just like, this is so fucking good. Like, it's, you know, like, you know, with me, with the punk and the metal, like, you can listen to stuff and it's like, that's cool. I mean, I can kind of tell that, you know, they didn't have the best production, or maybe this guy doesn't really know how to play drums, or this guy's not the best singer or whatever. But I see what they're trying to do and it's cool. But your stuff is like, literally, like, you could put, you know, I'm not super entrenched in that world, but you could put your album with, you know, whomever else, and it's right there with all of
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We like to think so. I mean, you know, Psych 101, excuse me, was, it was Psych 101 for a reason, not only, you know, to kind of play on my name and my studies and everything, but also that was the first time I was doing a serious album. I had my mixtape mixed and mastered, but it wasn't original, all original beats and everything. And, you know, Perception, that was his first time really recording like a project. Write One from One Music Collective, that was his first like fully mixed and mastered project. I think maybe aside from Perceptions, I think he did that one as well. So there was a lot of learning that was going into that. And going from that to Mansion Music, I really wanted to work with Lito because of Albert J's album Grow, which is like a cinematic experience. It's like 17 or 18 tracks, and it really is a journey that's beyond just listening to dope tracks over dope beats. And that like kind of helped me step up my game. But obviously, you know, I met him through Mike, did a lot of shows with him. He was getting booked, I was getting booked. He went on tour with us, and right before that, we had done a song together. Then we were listening to other beats, and we actually wrote Mask Off in New York, but right before COVID. There was no such thing as COVID when we wrote Mask Off. Didn't exist.
I was listening to that today, and I was like, I was trying to figure out the lyrics and place them in the timeline of everything that happened. Yeah.
No COVID references,
you
but
guys had that third eye, you could see what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got lucky. The beat was the sample of the movie The Mask, the intro to the Jim Carrey movie. So it just, the stars aligned on that one, which was cool. But after we did that track, we were like, we click lyrically, the vibe is there, we write good music, let's maybe do a little EP. And then we did a couple more tracks and we were like, we gotta do an album, bro. Like, we can't keep sitting here like half do it. Like, we know it's dope. It's not like we met up and we're like, oh, we should do an album. It's smart.
It's fucking
like,
hard to do an album.
With alone, let alone with a person. But we just, I think we had heard each other enough and performed it with each other enough where like once we started collaborating,
you just had the frequency down. You were on clicked, the same.
Yeah. And like, we're like great friends.
How long did it take to record that?
I mean, it took, if you include every track, even before we knew it was going to be an album, like a year, year and a half to lay down. Mainly it took so long to release just because of the thought that went into the album release at the Vault. Just the album cover was a picture taken of me and him at work, because we worked at Gin Joint, or I used to work there, he still works there. But we were in the Vault.
Oh shit, Albert J works at Gin Joint?
That's how we got the Vault.
You gotta get me in there. Good.
Yeah, we were working at Gin Joint. He had been kind of building that bridge for a long time, because he's been there for a few years getting into the Vault, because that's an untouchable hip hop venue. No one just walks, that's, you know, several thousand dollars just to book the venue for a couple hours. But because we worked there, CW, the owner, very much believes in what we were doing and has a huge respect for Albert J, his work ethic. You know, he's got kids and he still does the music thing and is responsible for both. And she put a lot of faith into his ability to make that a responsible and a good night, because obviously if it went wrong, that's our jobs, not just our music careers. Yeah. So we passed with flying colors, I think. The optics, the way people were dressed was just, it was a movie. Like, I didn't feel it when it was happening because of all the organization that went into
your
it.
Your focus, man. You got
it was
laser
like a
focus.
Wedding. Yeah. I was like, we felt like bride and groom. Like, yo, this is like the most stressful day of my life. Like, I'm not even having fun. But we were in the zone. It didn't affect us.
How do you feel coming off stage, though? Like, do you just euphoric? I mean, is it just?
It was like literally like a lucid dream. It felt wrong.
Yeah.
Because it was so crazy. I mean, we had Mike, Matt, we had Dennis Amadeus open, who's also on the album, do spoken word poetry to like start the night. Danny Faz was playing the album interlude, the courtyard interlude, like when people were walking in, sitting down, eating their meals. The VIPs got full service and meals, drinks. We did a raffle and just, yeah, coming off of stage, it was more so mindset of I got to help clean up too. So I was also in work mode, but right after the performance, I was just like,
I could die right now.
Yeah, it would have been totally fine, because we did what we set out to do. We did it in such a short amount of time, and we had a lot of help from people. But for the most part, Albert and I really took the initiative to make it the night that we wanted to make it, and we were fearless in making that happen. We were told no by so many people. Don't do that show there. don't make an album together. You're not even your own identity yet, which is a big reason of why I went from Dead Rabbits to Wave Theory. And, you know, yeah. Now we have MGE, My Guy Entertainment, which is Albert J, Jet Fuel, JPEG Jack, Lito, kind of taking all of their collective crafts, having worked together so regularly and putting together these shows, me doing a lot of shows for them, but also still maintaining my individuality. But at that time, I was like, if the music's good, it doesn't, none of that matters.
Right.
It doesn't matter if I lose a little bit of my identity or if my individuality is kind of masked in the hype of things of, oh, well, you're part of this collective and that collective. It doesn't matter because the album sounded great. Right. Lito did, his production and engineering skills are just through the roof. And like I said, after I heard Grow, I was like, Lito's the guy. Like, I
work. So what are we working on right now?
So I'm working on my first solo, like full-length solo album now. I just began that process last week. I went to the studio with Siobhan, who is the best. I mean, I really, really do think that she has the potential to get to a status that's just.
But how does this start? Do you start with the beats or do you start with writing the lyrics or like do you have a theme? Do you have a concept? Do you have a.
It's a feeling. When I listen to Busta Rhymes' album, Extinction Level Event 2, that came out last year, Chris Rock is narrating it, and he says something on during one of the tracks where he's like, it's about how the record feels. Nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started getting that feeling when I was writing in the last 6 months, I kind of realized, like, I can't just keep writing good bars over good beats. Mm-hmm. I have purchased like over 100 beats to my portfolio that are specifically going to be used at some point for me. Many from Mike Mass. I have Eddie Deuce, Billy Clinton, like all whole bunch of Tampa cats, out of town cats. But I realized like I need to kind of tell my story. You know, Mansion Music, it's a collection of vibes, and I think that that's amazing. And the story that's told throughout Mansion Music, that evolution of the first half of the album that's more lit to the second, that's a little bit more focused, that kind of woke me up to like this next album has to be,
it's gonna be it,
painstakingly meticulous. Like, yeah. I'm gonna record, the goal is to record every track I've ever written, even if I don't like it that much anymore, record everything on beats that I can use, that I can market and make royalties off of. And we're going to listen to all of them and probably pick like two or three and then build an album around that. Yeah. So I have a lot of ideas in my head that I've done over the years, but because of timing, money, all that, like I said, I just got a raise at my job. So that actually opened the door for me to start going back to the studio every 2 weeks, as opposed to a couple times every other month where when I have some extra money, I can go.
How important is subject matter?
For this particular project, it is going to be a full concept piece. I don't know what that is yet, but we are working on tracks that are very closely related and using that to build that. I have my cousin who's going to be basically executive producing the album. Albert J has my beats. My friend Justin has my beats. And we're actually sitting down as a group and listening to everything I've ever purchased. Once I get them recorded, everything we've ever listened to, what works, what doesn't work, what's not lasting, what was just cool for 5 seconds and then I got bored of it. Like, I'm not going to put out any more music that I don't have confidence in. Not that Psych 101 or Mansion Music I wasn't confident in, but I had a lot of self-doubt because I wasn't at a place in my life where I felt
you that. You got the, you know, foundation. You got your legs underneath you right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. So now I have somewhere to stand to throw a punch. Right. And yeah. I don't have to worry about losing my footing. Right. I could just hit something. And I very much feel like I'm ready to start that process. But yeah, I mean, it starts with.
Did you watch Tyson Fury on Saturday?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I didn't. I'm sorry. I heard somebody got knocked out.
Yeah, it was a good. It was probably one of the best pay-per-views I've ever watched.
That's what
talking about legs beneath you.
We used to watch a lot of fighting. My grandfather was a boxer.
Well, I mean, Puerto Rican, New York. Boxer. I mean, there's no way you didn't. I mean, my brother-in-law AJ, his father was one of the biggest Puerto Rican music artists ever. It was
word
Conjunto Cascaya something or other, and. Like in the 70s, like almost kind of disco, whatever. But okay. Literally, so my brother-in-law looks just like his dad and won't be at fucking Disney World or wherever.
Someone will be like, oh my God.
They'll come up and they're like, are you whatever? Because he looks so much like him. And like, that's they've so named funny. Roads after him. And I mean, it's, they take that shit seriously. So anyway, well, this has been awesome. I vibe with you so good. Like, if you ever want to just do your own podcast, you've got free run in the studio. You're easy to talk to. Well, I can't wait to see what comes of this album.
I'm excited. We're working on it now. Like I said, I got Siobhan in there, and I actually wrote some hooks for her to sing specifically. So that kind of got that was a milestone in and of itself from a compositional point of
that's sick.
Now I'm not just writing for myself. That's the goal, is ultimately to be a composer. You don't want to just write your own music and perform. You want to put other artists on, and you know how to direct them. And ultimately, that's my professional music goal, is to ascend to that point where I've done my thing, I've gained my recognition, and now I can pass that on to the next
generation. Are there unconquered lands in hip hop? Like, is there territory that's not, I mean, do you think there's like,
I don't think there's many rappers that can sing and play guitar like I do.
Okay.
I would say me bringing the guitar to the stage, a lot of my hooks you heard I sing on. Even Perception said it. I was performing at White Lie. I did a new track on one of Mike's beats that I got a while ago. And he was like, I've never heard anyone go from rapping so many words and those schemes and flows to like singing, like full-fledged singing, and then right back into a verse.
So that's a good point. Do you ever think you might record something that's in a different lane? Like, kind of?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not time for that, I think. I don't want to estrange anybody who's gotten into
my... You're still building your name up.
It's like I'm like a comic book character. I don't want to start coming out with like a horror novel yet. Like, I have to keep the story going. Psych has a long way to go development-wise. Marketing, there's a lot of loose ends that need to be tied up musically, of things that are sitting on the shelf that are ready to come out. And I think that after this project, I'll be ready to kind of step out of hip hop, because I love music so much. And I'm a closeted, you know, like frontman singer. I've never been able to
get like a D'Angelo record or a Maxwell record or like kind of a soul.
We'll get there. Yeah. I feel like what I've done is already almost like fringe enough, like Seek Patience, Beyond Elsewhere, Thundercloud. Like, I'm trying to sing what makes me feel something, because, and that's, I think, going into this next project, the key.
You're a Frank Ocean fan?
I wouldn't say I'm like a fan, but I love Frank Ocean's music. Like, so, I don't know enough about Frank
Ocean.
Well,
but talking about singing in hip hop and kind of an experience and a feeling and all that, you know, I remember that the Orange album or whatever, just like
Agent Orange. Yeah.
I was just like, fuck, this guy's on
or a Channel
different,
Orange.
Yeah. Me. Yeah. This guy's on a different level. Like, he's just, you know, he was on Saturday Night Live, and I remember John Mayer was playing guitar behind him, and I was like, is this corny? Is this cool? Or is this, But I dug it. I really liked it.
There's something to, I think, and I think that's what Mac Miller was kind of touching on, is, yeah, I think Mac Miller was the first stereotypically viewed rapper who really started to go on an international stage and do things that were not hip hop. Tyler, the Creator.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people have done it, but there's also guys like Lupe, who tried to stop doing what he was doing to find either a different lane of rapper or a different lane of music, and it didn't work. What I'm doing right now is, it's kind of why I call myself Psych. Everything I talk about rap-wise is all things that I perceive, and I just talk about them in a way that, like, I feel like I've only kind of been able to ponder, and I try to share that with people. Like, a lot of the things I say are really not complex. It's the way that I'm presenting it to you.
Right.
You know? I don't say I'm happy. I'll take four bars to break down an analogy for why I'm happy or why I'm not happy.
And you leave people there without saying it to them directly.
That's the whole point. So, yeah, like, Psych is kind of that kind of amalgam of like classical influence, rock influence, you know, hip hop, all of the people that I've come across who I've learned from and have opened my mind to new genres. I would say the only genre of music I don't listen to is country. I kind of avoid it just because I genuinely don't enjoy it.
I'm with you.
But I think maybe one day I'll even be open-minded enough
to
consider
pre 1980. Pre 1980.
I just love music.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for coming by. This was rad. You know, I can't wait to see what you come up with. I love your music so far.
Thank you,
brother. I think what you're doing is awesome. I wish you the best of luck. Hope you have, you know, great success in everything that you do.
For sure, man. Can I drop the socials real quick?
Please. Where can people find you online? Where can people find you? Please do it.
So www.psychmontano.com has been live since 2019. I feel like I don't project that enough. Psychmontano.com for all the shows, merchandise, everything. At Psychmontano, PSYCHMONTANO for all social media, streaming platforms. I'm the only Psychmontano in the world. I wrote an entire song, How to Spell Psych, because people actually struggle with it so much. that'll be on the album.
It's a lot of C's and H's and Y's and yeah.
It's just, there's no vowels and people just get messed up. So yeah, find me and we're going to keep doing dope shit.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome. I really appreciate it. I'm going to try and get it out tomorrow. So it'll be out for the weekend. That'll be
dope.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You, all right.